Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very happy to have with me today in the studio on University Matters, Dr. Engineer David Zamit-Manjon. Dr. Zamit-Manjon is a senior lecturer and head of the Department of Electronic Systems Engineering here at the University of Malta. Just a few words about his career. He graduated with a bachelor's degree from this university in 1991. And worked with SGS Thomson Microelectronics as a production engineer in the testing and finishing department. In 1992, he joined the University of Malta to lecture in electronics, and he continued his studies at Cranfield University, UK, where in 1995 he obtained a master's degree in electronic systems design and then returned to Malta to continue lecturing. In 1997, he returned to Cranfield University to read for a PhD in flight test and dynamics, graduating in 2001. On completion of his studies, Dr. Zamit-Manjon focused on starting up a research area, avionics, at the University of Malta, and has today become a specialist in the field, and I hope we shall be talking at length about that. He's a member of the Advisory Committee of Aeronautics Research in Europe, ACARE, and represents Malta's interests in transport and aeronautics in the European framework programs, and has acted as expert and evaluator for contract proposals on behalf of the European Commission. Since 2003, Dr. Zamit-Manjon has won over €2.3 million in competitive research contracts, which is a notable feat, certainly here at this at a national level. He has been involved in a number of high-profile European programs, such as FlySafe, Clean Sky, and Alicia. In his 18 years at the University of Malta, Dr. Zamit-Manjon has spearheaded also the subject of electronic systems within the Faculty of Engineering. And today, as we said, he's head of the Department of Electronic Systems Engineering, leading 13 academic and research staff members. He's also a lecturer in avionics at Cranfield University. He's a Chevening Scholar and a Commonwealth Scholar, and holds a GEC Marconi Avionics Prize for distinction in his studies. Welcome to the program, Dr. Zamit-Manjon.
Thank you, Tricia, and thanks for your invitation and your kind introduction.
Well, judging from what we've just said, there are perhaps two main areas that we can talk about today. Firstly, perhaps we can speak about the avionics side, because avionics isn't exactly a subject that immediately springs to mind when we're thinking about Malta and research, although lately we have Lufthansa Technik. Perhaps it's become more of a thing here on the island, but certainly until they turned up, avionics wasn't really on the research agenda. So I think it will be fascinating to find out really how that came about, and then to discuss also perhaps what form that research is taking. And so do tell us, how did you get involved in avionics?
That's a bit of a funny story in a way. You can trace this to the origins back to when I was a kid. I used to like anything that moves, cars, ships, boats, planes. And actually, I started liking boats before I liked planes, because I started sailing at the age of 7. And I can recall going to see airplanes at the airport first time in 1980, at which time I was 13 years of age. Well, in a way, I was always an outdoor guy and somebody who liked action and being involved in with machines and boats and things. Ever since I was a little boy, and in a way, I was the black sheep of the family. I come from a family of educators. My father, Joseph Zamit-Manjon, was the director of education, and there's a long family history in education. And clearly moving away from education and looking towards these things was a bit of a shock, perhaps. My father would be able to describe it better. But what I tried to do is, because I had in my family upbringing the need to continue studies, and my aunt was one of the first graduates of the University
yes,
of Malta.
Yes, of course,
as you very well remember. Yes,
yes, yes, absolutely. I had so, great fun meeting her.
It obviously, the family upbringing made a difference in pushing us towards a university education. And I tried to reconcile the two ideas of love of airplanes with education. Of course, when I was a kid, I wanted to become a pilot. But then when you become realistic and you say, okay, I've got different skills and I got into an engineering degree, I start seeing at what could be done. And when I graduated in those days, electrical engineering, and I remember applying for a post here because I wanted to further my studies and work in avionics. And my aunt was in the UK at the time, and her husband, Professor Joe Bannister, was lecturing at Cranfield. And Cranfield is a very well respected organization, university in aeronautics, and she told me that's the place you need to go. So it became a bit of a dream. And when a call was issued in 1991, I applied for the post, and I very brazenly said that I would want to continue studying in avionics. I intend to teach in electronics, but we should open up a research area in avionics. And I was brazen enough to say that if you're not interested in this area, please don't bother calling me. That's how it all started, I guess.
Obviously, then you went to Cranfield. After doing that, then, of course, you got involved with projects that were yes. that enabled you then to continue to do the research, because it's research that costs money, yes. requires resources, and obviously, and it's not something with a tradition here in Malta, so you would obviously need outside help.
Yes, these things happen sometimes, the old adage of the right person at the right time. I mean, it does happen perhaps. I did apply for a number of scholarships. I wasn't always successful, but I did set off another spark unknowingly in that I applied for a Commonwealth scholarship. And again, for the aspect of avionics, it was an unknown subject for Malta in those days. But I must have set off something where somebody was far-sighted would have said this is potentially of value. So although I had the vision and the dream, obviously somebody who knew what he was doing and had the authority to take decisions actually saw the potential. Yeah. So I became a Chevening Scholar and then a Commonwealth Scholar. And that is how I managed to get the funding to be able to study at Cranfield University. And obviously that then, success breeds success, where you open up your opportunities, the more specialized and the more qualified you become, the more you get to know the right people, the more you'll be able to sell what you're capable to do. And then basically, when I finished my studies, I managed to hit on a very hot topic in aviation safety during my PhD studies. And when I came to Malta, I could actually use that knowledge and my work to springboard on new subjects in aviation safety, which was and still is a very hot topic in the early 2000s. And with our eventual accession to the European Union, we had the opportunities to start meeting European partners and sell the University of Malta as a potential research partner. And I took on board the idea of spearheading the participation, the potential participation of the University of Malta in high-profile, high-quality research activities of the European Union. And, well, we have been successful, and we have obviously competed against some very notable organizations, and we have been awarded a significant amount of money. So that testifies to the quality and the capability of the University of Malta. And well, everything else is history.
There are some very very big names involved in, for example, the FlySafe. Names, if you sort of start listing the names, you think, my goodness, you know, these are the big boys, really, as far as avionics is concerned.
I mean, we work with Airbus, we work with Thales, we work with BAE Systems, NLR, DLR. These are household names in the aeronautics community, and so forth. In Odysseus, we are developing what we call a single display cockpit. Currently, there are a number of displays in a cockpit, and if you make the whole instrument panel as a single display with touchscreen capabilities, you have added operational and safety advantages. We're doing this with a number of partners, such as Thales again and Alitalia and the Technology University in Denmark. Then there is Alicia, where we are looking at pushing the boundaries of operational capability to all weather, where we want to make the, in our case, the universities of Malta is working on technologies where the aircraft in very bad visibility in low fog would be able to taxi safely and automatically without pilot input, basically guide itself on the taxiway without anybody touching it. And that is what is being developed in Malta. And we had to compete against other universities and against other major organizations. And in Clean Sky, for example, we managed to set up a consortium. I was co-heading the consortium. And we were competing against companies like GE Avionics and Goodrich and Zodiac and a number of other partners. Well, we got it accepted. And some others, well, we're competing against them, so not everybody can win. And it is an achievement for the university to have become a reasonably high-profile player for its size and capacity.
Punching above its weight, as the expression goes.
This started with my work in the PhD back in 97, where I was offered a number of opportunities, different PhD topic titles. Ranging from the design of a low drag aircraft flying skimming over the sea, and to looking at problems in aviation safety in particular sectors of flight. In my case, it was takeoff, and the latter tickled my fancy. And it must have been a sort of it comes from your character, what you're capable of doing, your view of life, the way you think, and operations. And looking at aviation safety and how you can improve safety, looking at the weaknesses of the current or the limitations of the current global situation, and coming up with electronic systems, which is an avionics function, to make aviation safer, was something I really thought I could do and really interested me. And I did that for my PhD, and then we extended that concept to be able to look at other areas. So beyond takeoff, for example, in FlySafe, we suggested that we would look at the risk of aircraft colliding on the runway. There have been a number of large accidents. The largest accident in terms of fatalities today still is a runway collision between two jumbo jets in Tenerife back in the 70s. And recently there was a fatal accident, well, recently in the last decade in Linate. And there are two incidents every day that involve aircraft coming into conflict around the runway. Not colliding, but coming into conflict. So there is the need to ensure that even if they come into conflict, it will never end up in a collision. And these systems, which basically what we call provide surveillance, they check what is happening. And if there is a risk of collision, tell the pilot in an early, timely manner to avoid the accident is what we did in FlySafe. Now, it's a mixture between technology and in avionics, what you can do with the current technologies, making sure that you can make things safer. Because if you make a fall, what we call a false warning, you tell the pilot there's a potential accident developing when there isn't one, the pilot can take a reaction and crash the airplane. So you must be sure that you will never end up in that situation. So the net benefit will be there. It's not easy when it comes to technology, and we have seen that we can do this type of work, and we have. It's not only my work; it's basically my department's work. We have members of staff like Andrew Samut and Brian Zammit who have been working on these. These are assistant lecturers who are actually employed as academics with us. And they have developed the system together with me. And their work is really what has turned heads in the United States. We met people from NASA. We met people from Boeing. And they were impressed with what the university has done. And we have been quite commended quite well.
That's wonderful. I must say, I was looking on your website under the staff on the department's website, and I was looking at the photographs of your colleagues and thinking to myself, my goodness, these guys could all be my kids. You know, they look really young, and they're obviously young, dynamic. Mm. I mean, it must create a wonderful buzz actually in your department to have such a lot of young people.
I do put pictures of when I was younger, yes. No, they are very young.
I'm quite referring to you, actually.
Yes, yes, my department, this has come up from the shake-up following the strategic decision for the university to open a faculty in ICT. What happened in 2007 was that the survivors of the old Department of Electronic Systems Engineering were Professor Paulet, who is now in his late 60s, and myself. So the university had to go on an aggressive, relatively aggressive employment activity where we had to put in 5 members of staff. We still need to continue recruiting because we are still understaffed, but it is a process which has to be planned over a number of years, and we are more than halfway through it. They are young people who do not have a PhD. Now, these people, in one way, is an advantage because you can train them in the way the department can focus, and we are looking at making sure that these people become experts in electronics, which is fundamentally what we teach and what the obligations of the universities are in terms of national interests, and also become experts in research in areas which we use aviation, because aviation is basically a high technology and the showcase of technology. But we can apply the same technologies in automotive, in marine, for example, because if you're talking about aviation safety, the same concepts in a different environment operate for automotive. It's actually, it is very well known that the rigor in safety is much higher in aviation than in automotive and marine, although the sectors also are very sensitive to these areas. So we can apply our knowledge elsewhere.
It's a very high benchmark as
yes.
far as
and
security
is concerned. What you've said, they are young, yes, it is true. The more senior leader, the mentoring of the more senior people, perhaps Charles and myself, and the correct guidance, if I may say so, that provides with these individuals the capability to excel and leave a mark with major players like NASA, Airbus, Boeing, Thales at such a young age, in their 20s.
Yeah,
and I am very proud that they have been successful in achieving this.
The other area that I'd like to mention, or like to talk about a bit, is the teaching of electronics, because clearly we've been talking about aviation and projects and things that are going on, yes, inside the university, but I'd like to talk about the teaching, what kind of teaching you do, your relationship with the students, what are you trying to get across to them, what are you giving them?
Well, okay, everybody knows me. David Zammit Manjon equals airplanes. I mean, that's been ingrained in me since I was a kid, and people even at secondary school know me for that. And sometimes it's an advantage, but sometimes it can mislead, because in reality, our responsibility as a department, from a teaching perspective, is to teach electronics. My master's was in electronic systems design. So, okay, it was directed towards aviation, because it was from the School of Aeronautics, the College of Aeronautics in Cranfield. But I graduated as an electrical and electronics engineer. I specialized in electronics. I came to teach electronics in the University of Malta. I specialized again with a master's in electronic system design. We need to teach electronics in the country, and that is our core requirement. I also teach in Cranfield, and because I actually work with major companies in Europe and in the States, I know, I have seen what the requirements in terms of training are. And our aim as a department is to have a world-class capability in electronics. So we aim to teach students to become quite proficient and very, very skilled in graduate electronics, so in design of electronic systems. And we intend to be world-class in that, meaning that our engineers would do well in any world-class company.
What methodologies do you use?
Yes. First of all, I mean, I see this as a holistic perspective. It is not just a matter of me. It is a matter of all my staff need to have the same mindset, and all my staff do have the same mindset in providing world-class education. To provide world-class education, you need to be of high caliber yourself. So we are training our staff to be able to become of higher and higher caliber through continued professional development. In teaching, there are two platforms which first of all, before the platforms, I need to say that when you provide a course curriculum, you look at all the subjects you need. We don't just need electronics. We need things like power engineering, control theory, communications, software, and so on and so forth. So when you build a curriculum, you look at what is needed in terms of skills by the graduates, and you build around that. And that is what we have done. So we are very multidisciplinary. We need to be as electronics engineers. So we involve in our curriculum a lot of different disciplines from different departments and the faculty of ICT, for example. After that, then in the exact teaching of electronics, we build on two platforms. We need to be knowledgeable in the theory, so we provide very, very strong academic training, and we also have to have skill, because at the end of the day, when an electronics engineer basically practices his profession, he is going to design and potentially build electronic equipment. So people have to be skilled and proficient in the laboratory. And that is fundamental. It's a bit like surgery, for example. It's useless just to have somebody who comes out with a first class in medicine but never touched a patient. And then you throw him into an operating theater. I'm not too sure the patient would be very comfortable. So you need both sides. So the profession requires both the academic capability and the skill. And the skill comes from on-the-job training. And we have very, very good laboratories and a lot of laboratory time for students to ensure that we even train them. We actually teach both in the class and in the laboratory, and we spend a lot of effort coaching students in the laboratory, and that is fundamental.
Yes, their responsibilities are enormous. I mean, when you consider what they might be touching yes. when they go out into the world of work. And do they get opportunities to go beyond the laboratory, perhaps, and have contacts in industry, or is that something that hasn't been developed yet?
Well, traditionally, the industry is not very receptive to this sort of thing in Malta. Abroad, you will see that there are lots of internships. In Cranfield, for example, we have companies frequently coming to the university to recruit, to work with us, and so on and so forth. In Malta, it is still in an infantile stage, I would say. So it is hard to... we have not achieved that level of collaboration with industry yet. So that would be something which would be nice, I would say.
I'm going to ask you a controversial question. These world-class, really, students, when they graduate, are we keeping them here in Malta? Is it a good thing that they go abroad, perhaps, and have
yes.
a lot of experience abroad, and then maybe we'll benefit later on?
Absolutely. I mean, I have to admit that when you see the achievements, my achievements as a professional, I attribute a lot to that, to going abroad and getting the way the world works and going beyond the University of Malta. And Cranfield has been instrumental. My training Well, all my training experience has been critical, going back from primary school to secondary school at St. Aloysius College and then at sixth form and at university here and so on and so forth. But in this context, having spent over 4 years as a student in a world-class foreign university and exposing yourself to the world and breaking the insular problem of all small islands was a major asset. And of course, continuing to lecture there and also with the possibility to work with world class organizations worldwide. We're currently discussing things with Boeing, but that's a different business. It's a different discussion. That breaks down the barriers of the insular problem of a small island. So it is very fundamental. But whether we are losing students or not, I would not know the numbers. But I don't mind, because at the end of the day, we are training individuals. And individuals will stay if they want to stay, they will leave if they want to leave. And you will find that people who want to stay, who stay, very often is because they want to stay. So we will keep good people, I have no difficulty.
I'm always convinced that many Maltese do go away, but they also, it's a big pull to come home.
Yes.
So if they do get the opportunity, very often they do. I've seen it happen time and time again. In the half a minute that we have left, however, I'd like to mention the fact that you are not just stuck in your laboratory, or at least you have other interests. You obviously family life, and you mentioned sailing. Do you manage to do any of those activities now, or are you really too tired?
It's a shame. It's a shame. I amassed thousands of hours of sailing on small boats. I've even raced competitively. I've gone on large 9 and 12 meter boats. I've raced those. I've gone on long journeys. But in the last 12 years, I've gone down maybe 3 times. Which is very bad, but I had other responsibilities at work and also a growing family, so you have to shelve certain things, and it's a balance, and where you find your balance, it's your own business, and there's no right or wrong in this. It's just that you must not look back and then say, what a shame.
You have to make decisions with the material that you have.
Yes, I've done sailing, I've done cycling, I used to play football competitively, I used to be a playing spotter when I was a kid, and I still see some of my old friends stuck by the fence of the airport when I visit every now and again. And now with my young children, I'm starting to, my daughter plays the piano, my son plays football, so I'm starting to play with them too. And obviously my wife and I, Marion, she also has a professional career here, and so it's challenging, and as you very well know, as you know, family life is not easy in the very least. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you very, very much, Dr. Engineer David Manjon, for coming to talk to us on University Matters today. Thank you for listening to today's program. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series, University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.